very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's programme. Now, some great news coming in for those that have been waiting for surgery in the west of Ireland, but in Galway in particular. A new interim surgical hub for Merlin Park is to be amongst the first in the country delivered. Government Chief Whip and Minister of State, the Department of Health, Hildegard Nocton, joins me on the line. She's got full details of this. And Deputy Nocton, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Keith.
Is this the hub that the Minister Donnelly, when he was on the programme with me a few months ago, mentioned there's one in Talla and he wanted to get one into Galway? Is this the hub we're talking about here?
Yes, exactly. So this was one of five surgical hubs to be developed across the country. As we know, in the development plan, there was three elective hospitals that was agreed by government and agreed by cabinet, and they're progressing, one for Dublin, one for Cork and one for Galway. But as we know, I suppose elective hospitals or hospitals do take time and a number of years to construct. So we can't have a situation where we have people languishing on waiting lists. So in the meantime, we have these new surgical hubs. There, it's an interim elective hospital, if you like, to get through the waiting lists. So that will be, I suppose, Galway will be one of the first in the country of these surgical hubs that will be in place on Merlin Park, carrying out elective procedures that will take pressure off UHG. So a really significant investment for Galway, and this is part of, I suppose, the programme for government and certainly my commitment in the 2016 election and the 2020 election to ensure that we get an elective hospital for Merlin Park. So this is an interim surgical hub to increase capacity, take the pressure off UHG. So this surgical hub will be carrying out elective procedures like endoscopies, minor operations, outpatient treatment and outpatient diagnostic services, so that people don't have to go into UHG to get those procedures. They can get those procedures done on Merlin Park. And we also, if anyone has been out in Merlin Park on that site recently, you'll see huge progress in relation to the new outpatient facility. That's a 10.5 million outpatient facility there. Again, that, and it'll also actually have a cystic fibrosis unit out there where there'll be day procedures, outpatient appointments, diagnostics. Again, taking pressure off UHG, where people don't have to be travelling into that congested site, taking up those beds, and they don't need to be there. It's the facility will be able to take place and all those procedures can be carried out now in Merlin Park. So really significant progress happening on that Merlin Park site.
Now, when the Minister was on, he said they would be looking for commercial units even in and around Newcastle with a view to putting it there. But the decision has been made to bring it to Merlin Park. So is the facility in place in Merlin Park, or does the facility have to be created? Because you and I are long enough around to remember the leak in the roof that took nearly three and a half years to bring the theatres back online again. So is this going to be a quick solution rather than...
That's a really good point you raise there. So in order for this to be quick and to be up and running by next year, so this is going to be a modular unit. So they're going to install a modular surgical hub in Merlin Park. And that's why it's like a rapid build elective hospital in the interim while we're waiting for the design and all of that, the tendering process for the elective hospital itself. So, and this has been done, as I say, in five regions across the country, but Galway and Dublin will be one of the first because of the Merlin Park site, I suppose, because of the fact that it's zoned already for a hospital, it makes it easier. So yes, it's modular, it's a rapid build surgical hub that can take pressure off UHG, and really the importance here and the target here is to help people who are in pain right now listening to this radio programme who have been waiting to get their procedures. We want to tackle that now. We can't wait a number of years. So that's why this interim solution is being progressed.
Again, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I did think that the Minister, did he not say to me on that morning that it was working in Talla? But are you saying that Talla hasn't got it, or...
Yes. So it's modelled on what Talla has. Sorry. So Talla, it's the Reeve Centre at Talla University Hospital. So these five, and there'll be another one going into Dublin.
Okay,
these five hubs will be modelled on that. So it's intended that they're They'd be built or operational within kind of between 12 to 18 months. So it works very well in Talla. So this is just a big, it's a model that works well. They know how to do it and they want to replicate it now as quickly as possible across the country. And Galway, the Merlin Park site, is earmarked for that. So I think it's really significant news, not just for Galway. As we all know, there's people travelling from the wholesale, the hospital group from the west and northwest, travelling for elective procedures. This is going to help free up our waiting lists and get people through the process and get their procedures quicker.
No, it's great that we're moving forward. I have to say that much, yeah. But I mean, will there be adequate recovery beds for people if when they come out from these minor procedures, be it endoscopy, colonoscopy, minor ops or otherwise, will there be beds for them? Is that part of the modular build or will that be using hospital bed stock already?
So these would be day case procedures and outpatient procedures. So if somebody did need inpatient treatment, that's where, I suppose, where you have UHG. And I suppose that's the importance of being able to free up the UHG site. So as we know, the elective hospital, it's in a kind of a phased basis. Phase one would be day case procedures. Phase two would be inpatient. But where somebody did need to stay overnight, that will be accommodated and catered for as well. But the real, I suppose, pinch point, the pressure areas that need to be relieved are around, I suppose, day procedures, outpatient appointments, diagnostics, all of that, taking the pressure off UHG. That will free up space in UHG for, I don't know, the hip replacements, the knee replacements, where at the moment you do need that overnight stay. And also just to say that staff as well, they're finalising the sanction of new staff for this new surgical hub. So what we don't want, and you made reference to it there, is a situation where we have the new facility and not having the staff in place. So the department are finalising the sanction for that new staff. When they are hired, they'll start in UHG, and when that modular surgical hub is in place and up and running, they'll be transferred then from UHG site out to Merlin Park. So there should be that seamless transition in relation to making sure that these new elective surgical hubs are properly staffed.
But can I ask you just, I mean, a definite date, say, just for the Galway one, roughly, are you saying the middle of 2024 to the end of 24? What are we looking at?
It will be next year. It should be up and running. They're saying 12 to 18 months approximately for these new rapid build modular surgical hubs to be in place. So next year, I would say as quickly as possible, I would hope by mid next year. But every effort, and I was talking to officials in the Department of Health and really the HSE staff are just, their heads are down now in relation to getting these progressed and doing everything they can to get them accelerated as quickly as possible, because this is all about the patients, reducing the waiting lists, people who have been waiting for these procedures, and taking the congestion out of that UHG site where people, you know, they don't need to be there. They shouldn't need to be going into our acute hospital. We need to be separating our elective procedures from our acute care. And I think that's not me saying it. That's the clinician-led best practice in relation to making sure that we can separate out scheduled procedures, have them taking place, as many as possible, on the Merlin Park site, and then leave acute emergency care on the UHG site.
And can I ask you just in the meantime then, because if somebody is waiting for colonoscopy and or other procedures, and they're waiting a period of time, they're waiting quite a bit. Can the private hospitals like the Galway Clinic and the Bon Secours, is that patient treatment fund still available to the hospital in question to say, look, let's send 500 over to the two hospitals over the year and let's see, can we lift the burden on this new modular unit so that it hits the ground with less people on a waiting list?
Yeah, and I know that the HSC are doing a lot, and certainly the department, around reducing the number of people who are patients who are waiting for procedures. And even if they have to travel that bit further to get the procedure done, I know in relation to colonoscopies actually, or scope appointments, that the numbers of patients waiting over 13 weeks, that has reduced last year by over 40%, and we want to keep that going. So I know that work is happening around trying to, as well as getting these surgical hubs and the elective hospitals in place, I know the department are working very hard through the HSC to get through those waiting list numbers as fast as possible. And I've met people who have maybe gone to a different county to get their procedure, and they're quite happy to do it because they were, treated and their pain was relieved. So there's a huge amount of work happening. But I just think the infrastructure and the investment here on that Merlin Park site is long overdue, and it's great to see it happening between the outpatient, that's already under construction, and this new surgical hub that will be in place next year as an interim for the elective hospital as well. So a lot of work we all know needs to continue to be done, but it's great to see the progress happening.
It is. So really what you're saying to me, and I'm paraphrasing your words now, you're saying collectively that the Department of Health, the Saolta Hospital Groups, the HSE, they're using all the assets of the state to try and get through as much as they can, rather than it has to be in Galway, it could be Limerick, could be in Carlow, could be anywhere, but the procedures are being done collectively in assets of the state.
Yes, and yeah, they are. And where there's private, and in private hospitals as well, and there's so it's really the HSE working to, and they've been, I suppose, directed to do this as well, to try and take down these waiting lists as quickly as possible, and work with through the department, the HSE, and looking at ways that we can, and this is not just in Galway, but right across the country, to reduce waiting lists. And they have come down, but we need to continue to do more, as well as making sure that we have the infrastructure to do it here within our own region, because as we all know, we have been so many years calling for, putting a new ED on the site of UHG, and we have the interim one, which is working very well, but we need to progress that as well. We have the strategic assessment report that's now been approved for the new emergency department by the Department of Health, and they're now preparing a business case. So all of these frustrations that I know people listening are quite well aware of, we're progressing this as fast as we can, and putting huge pressure on to ensure that the West gets the infrastructure that we deserve. Like, we know the fantastic staff, and I just want to mention this because staff often say to me, all we hear is negativity in the health service, but we all know that when you get in, the treatment and the care you get is fantastic. Yeah. But we just need to match that with the infrastructure now to support the patients who are coming through our system, and the increase in our population and the numbers of, I suppose, aging people. We're all going to live longer, which is great, but with that comes, I suppose, ailments and our health system that needs to be able to cope with it as well.
Okay. Two final questions, if you don't mind. Just, we spoke earlier on with Tim Carey, who's the head of the electoral operations at the new commission. Can you see an extra seat in Galway West next time round? Can you see an extra seat in Galway East, Galway Roscommon? How can you see that panning out? And is there any indication as to when the election is going to be, Deputy Hildegard Nocton?
Well, on the election first, I wish I had a crystal ball to answer all those questions.
I think we all do.
It is a topic of discussion by many TDs and senators and certainly councillors. The election, what I can say is that we're working very hard as a government. I sit a cabinet, as you know, and we have a huge amount of work to do in relate with this. Obviously, no funding is there, and there's, you know, plenty of funding. This is about delivery of infrastructure, and I really feel we're working very well in government. And just the elective hospital, for example, the surgical hubs, to have an election, not that there's any prospect of it happening like, over the next few months, would just put a hold, a stall on all those really important projects. We have housing
autumn.
And all of that.
He did say, he did mention autumn. Was it next autumn or the autumn 2025?
No, absolutely not. We have an important budget to work towards this autumn. We have a very ambitious housing for all project as well that we want to deliver across the country. We've just increased the grants for vacant properties for derelict sites. We want to scrap development levies for developers to try and increase supply of housing as quickly as possible.
No, I appreciate that, but come back to the question, you don't know when the election is going to be. It could be autumn 2025. But come back to, do you think we might have an extra seat in Galway? Like, we won't have a six-seater.
I don't know. I suppose the answer, I don't know, and we'll have to wait for the commission to report in August. I think it'll become very clear, but the population is increasing, so it could very well be, but we'll all be watching it very carefully. I wouldn't even want to hazard a guess, because I don't know. I suppose whatever way the lines are drawn come August, we all just have to deal with it and get on with it and represent our constituencies, our new constituencies, if that's the case it is. But we all have a work to do. I was elected in Galway West, South Mayo. I have a mandate to do that. And until that changes, I'll continue to work very hard. And I'm looking forward to actually the months ahead. I think that there's a lot going to be delivered over the next few months. Right. And I can certainly see changes. So I think we all want to be around there to make sure that it's delivered and that we can keep pushing it, because elections do put everything on hold sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right, Deputy Hildegard Nocton, Chief Whip, thank you indeed for joining us. Minister today, Hildegard Nocton, thank you for joining us today on the programme. When do you think the election will be? come on, lads, just drop me a text. When do you think it'll be? And you can do so to the following number, 086 38
33 553. Galway Tolls, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.
Now, I have two young people sitting opposite me today. Paul Walsh is the managing director of Adhere Digital and his colleague, Ron Your Heart. They're both from County Mayo. Paul is from Ballyhonus. And Groin's from just outside Cross Malina, but they're heading to Portugal, and they're going to tell us why, because they're a digital marketing firm based in the West End, and they're in for three European awards. Morning to you, Paul. Thanks indeed for joining us today on the programme. Well done, and I'll get to Groin in a moment. Tell me a little bit about this is a European search award, is it?
Yes, it is. So so we're a search engine advertising company, so we try and get companies on the top of Google for specific things. Companies will pay quite a lot of money to be number one in Google for certain keywords, and that's our job. There could be 10,000 people a day searching for red dress, and some of our companies will make sure that they'll pay us money to make sure they're at the top of that. So, yeah, we're in existence since 2018. We've been, getting bigger and better clients as the years go on, and it's for the first time now ever we're in the European Search Award. So,
and how did that come about?
Yeah, look, I suppose we've been trying to get into them for a while, and I suppose now this year we're at the stage now where we're spending bigger budgets with clients. We're getting huge returns on our clients' investment, and it's finally been picked up and recognised at a European level, which is huge, and I think it's unheard of. I don't think any marketing agency this side of the country has ever been nominated for one. So we've been nominated for three.
Yeah.
So we've been nominated for the best small PPC agency. We've been nominated for the best e-commerce campaign. And Groin Your Heart here herself has been nominated for a Rising Star Award for her excellent work she's done to date.
Groin Your Rising Star?
Yes. Yeah, there's quite a lot of meaning behind that, I guess. But just in layman's terms, I guess, it's people in digital marketing under the age of 30 that have been making an impact in the industry. So, yeah, really excited to be even nominated for the award. I think we feel like we've won already.
Yeah. It's a tough life, really, because you have to go down to Lisbon sometime in May, don't you?
Yeah, we're going to Lisbon, actually, at the end of May. The awards are on there at the end of the month. So we're really looking forward to that and getting to mingle with all the other agencies from around Europe as well. Mm. It'll be fun to be representing the West of Ireland, as Paul was saying.
And Paul, I mean, it's a growing market that you're operating within, but it's a demanding market, and clients are spending on digital, but they're also demanding return.
They are. And I suppose the beauty of what we do is we set up analytics for our clients, and we're able to track every single part of the consumer journey. So as soon as someone clicks on an ad, we can see who they are, what device they came from, if they're male or female, what time of day they bought the item from one of our ads. So for the first time in history now, we've actually a real opportunity to measure every single step of a consumer journey. And clients like that, and they would like to, every month, Groin and our team will sit in calls with our clients and go through, do you know what? You're better off spending your money at Thursday, Friday, Saturday instead of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You get a better return on investment, you get more sales, you get higher conversion rates, all those kind of things. So it's a more informed way, an insightful way of doing marketing advertising.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, I guess the main thing that we're hearing a lot of these days is about like this kind of looming economic crash. But what we're seeing is that companies aren't pulling back on what they're putting into their advertising spend. They're even putting in more. But what they want to see more of is a smarter way of spending their money. Mm. And I guess it's the same for, people every day. They want if the money they have, they want to spend it better. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that across the board with all the companies as well that are coming to us looking for advertising services.
Mm. Good luck with it, lads. It's a great story, so it is. Rising Star Award, Groin Your Heart. Will you be nervous?
Yeah, I think so. But I'm sure we'll take it in our stride anyway, so we'll make the most of it.
Paul, are you nervous now?
I am a little bit, yeah. I mean, for me, it's quite... I spent a lot of my time in London working for marketing agencies, and we're up against marketing agencies I used to work for in London. So for me, this is a complete alien concept. And when I started up the business, I could never imagined in just 4 years I would actually be competing against some of my peers and the people that I actually, businesses I used to work for. So yeah. I'm over, yeah, like Ronnie said, look, we've been nominated for 3 awards. We feel like we won already, but it'd be fantastic to come back with some silverware.
Good on you, good on you. So you're based near Munro's there, yeah?
Right beside Munro's, dangerously, yeah.
Dangerously, yeah. That's, well, look, they're good people as well. Absolutely. Thank you both for joining us today. Gráinne, good luck.
Thank you.
Paul, thank you indeed for joining us. Matt here, ADHERE Digital. And thank you guys for joining us today. Well done. I want to move on today because I'm joined by Hannah Daly. And Hannah joins me on the line because she's going to be in Kenny's Bookshop this coming Thursday, the 4th of May at 6 p.m. And Hannah is the author of Knowing No Boundaries, and she joins me on the line today. Hannah, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you're a specialist pediatric occupational therapist. You're a mother of four. You also have severe dyslexia, dyspraxia, sensory processing disorder, and the reading age of a seven-year-old. And yet you have multiple university degrees. You've been through the mail.
I've certainly taken the long way to get where I am today, and not the conventional way. So as you said, I have severe dyslexia, dyspraxia and sensory processing disorder. Do you want me to explain what they might be?
Yeah, please do, yeah.
Okay, so people know a lot more about dyslexia as it affects reading, spelling, and language. And then the dyspraxia affects coordination, so like fine motor and gross motor, walking, running, climbing, swimming, using knives and forks, handwriting. And then the sensory processing is when, you know, we have different sensory systems, and I have diverse reactions to too much auditory input, so too much noise or too much tactile, so too much touch. Smells can be quite big for me. And then I don't get enough vestibular, which is like balance and movement. So I constantly need to move to understand where my body is in space. So it makes it a little bit challenging kind of interacting with systems and in a neurotypical world.
And you were diagnosed at about 7 years of age?
I was diagnosed with dyspraxia when I was about 6 or 7. I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was nearly 9, going on 10, and then sensory processing as an adult.
But that didn't hold you back.
No, I did go to 5 different primary schools chasing an education. I did experience severe bullying that had a massive impact on my self-esteem. I went to special reading school, which was fantastic, but it didn't improve my reading because of severity. So 2% of people have severe dyslexia. So I just I'm not 2%. I did my leaving cert with readers and scribes. I did things non-conventionally, I suppose. And I did university with a lot of effort and a lot of almost failing of things before the correct supports were put in place to enable me to succeed.
And did the university put in those supports for you then?
Eventually. Like, I suppose, so I studied, my first degree was performing arts. So I did my degree in the UK, and in the UK you don't get, the funding comes from Ireland for additional needs. There's a delay, bureaucracy delay, so it meant I had no correct support until like nearly the Christmas. But luckily enough, when I was over in the UK, actually a lady from Galway was in the 99p shop, and I was in the 99p shop, and I was like, oh, the joys of, you know, someone finding a 99p store. And we spoke a little bit, and she said, I'm living up the road, I'm a teacher, and she said, if you need anything, you know, here's my number, pop in for a cup of tea. So I went to university not realizing the supports hadn't been put in place. My mum's back in Ireland, I'm in London on my own, and I ring this lady from Galway who's a teacher, and she comes over and starts helping me until my correct funding came into place. So if it wasn't for her, I don't think I would have even made it through the first semester of university. And she's now, ironically, an educational psychologist, so she's gone back and retrained, which is amazing.
What a lovely story, though. What a really lovely story. And then when did you decide then to bring to the table and Knowing No Boundaries?
Okay, so I was also the Dublin Rose in the Rose of Tralee in 2008, and I started speaking about having these different difficulties and not realising that it was really important to talk about these things. And then I started getting invited to kind of do more talks and, you know, do social skills workshops with people who have, you know, additional needs. And I then realised, I think I want to be an occupational therapist. So I went back and trained to be an occupational therapist at that stage because I wanted to be the expert in the area from the kind of clinical perspective. And it was when I'd first qualified as an OT, I decided I wanted to dictate. So again, don't remember, I can't read or write. So I use admin support for everything. I have to just use really lots of cheats to get by. So I dictated my little stories bit by bit and then knitted them together with an editor last year. So if you think about it, in 2014, I dictated and I leave it. Since then, I went and worked in the area. I had four kids. I had two bereavements. My two brothers passed away. We had COVID. And then I kind of got to the stage where I said, like, this story is really relevant. It's what, you know, young people need. And okay, it's scary sharing my experience. You feel very vulnerable. But if it can help people, then that's what I'm going to do. And that's when I did it last year and just published it. And actually, Kenny's Bookstore were one of the first to put it up for pre-order. So Tomás was fantastic and really supportive there. And since it's come out, like, the feedback has been phenomenal. People are saying, like, thank you for helping me feel seen. You know, you've given me hope, which is brilliant, which is why the book is there. And it's also, I want to try and bring access to work into Ireland. So in the UK, when I started working, I got to have admin support that was funded through, like, an outside government scheme. We don't have the equivalent support in Ireland for people in the workplace who might need additional support. Right. So that's something that the book is allowing me to kind of generate these conversations and discussions.
And Hannah, do you ever stop and think about what you've achieved? I mean, I read out everything about you at the beginning. You're now, after adding more to it, you threw COVID into it. You lost two brothers. I mean,
yeah,
and you're young.
But I think that's the thing. Like, life throws you stuff. Like, I could have given up lots of times, and maybe I should have, because
trying to
fight systems, maybe I shouldn't have, but it's a lot of effort. But I kind of feel like I've learned a lot of skills along the way, and I certainly, you know, everyone shouldn't have to learn all these skills each time. So it's kind of, I feel an onus or responsibility to support people. And don't get me wrong, like, in my day-to-day work, I work with kids with autism, I work with kids with sensory processing disorder. I've also done a postgrad in sensory integration after I qualified as an occupational therapist, because I really wanted to understand how better to support people like me. And now I'm a mother, I feel there is also that onus on wanting the world to be better, wanting the world to be easier for my kids so they don't have to experience as much adversity as maybe I experienced. And I think you have a choice. I think you can play the victim or be really upset, yeah, and let that hold you back, or you can use positivity to kind of go, keep going. Like, as you said, you'll get there. It just might not be the most conventional way. Mm-hmm. And like, the book is actually really, even professionals are like, it's gone on a few reading lists for SNAs and I think a few teachers and stuff. So it is really, it's a really useful resource for multitude of people, and it's funny and it's very honest, which is in today's society, I suppose we don't really have that as direct and forward, and maybe there's a reason this, it's unfiltered, I suppose, but that's who I am, and that's how it is.
But I mean, to lose what you had, you know, or to have what you had, and then to lose two brothers
within 9 months. Yeah, that was really tough, because it was in the middle of, within 9 months of each other, and it was in the middle of COVID too, so, and I was 7 months pregnant. Like, it was a horrifically hard time, and like, I don't know if anyone has been to COVID funerals where there was only 10 people at the beginning. Like, you know, your husband couldn't even come in, you couldn't travel more than 5 kilometers, you couldn't, like, it was such a hard time.
It was body bags and that was it, into a, you know, when they passed away. Yeah.
It wasn't quite as bad as, like, I mean, it was in a coffin, but it, like, yeah, it was literally, it was very early. I think it was April, it was April, just 3-year anniversary just was there a couple of days ago, so it was just literally in the start and height of COVID. But I think, and again, I talk about all of that in the book, I talk about the bereavement process and the counselling and, you know, these things, because they are important, and all of this stuff has an impact on things will happen, people always, and I think it's, we have a choice. It mightn't be what we want, but we have to keep going and move forward with those things. And my brother, so one of the brothers that passed away, he had Down syndrome and was deaf, and he was a real, when he came into my life, there was an affinity there with him because he had to do things his own way. So we did ISL, Irish Sign Language, and that was really important too. And then obviously my other brother, Stuart, he was, you know, very ill for a long time, but he just was such a fighter. And I actually did a stem cell donation for him. So like, it's just, you know, when you see people who just go through even harder challenges than you and see how they just keep persisting, it's really inspiring.
You're a mighty woman, seeing your hand daily.
But I'd love to chat to people. Like, I'd be telling my story, and there's lots of many a thing to my story. Friend will listen, because I know these stories over the years, but when you see them knitted together, jeepers, like, you really understand.
Yeah.
You know, the impact of your condition as well as just an. I have lived an interesting life regardless of having these conditions, but the conditions are show when society doesn't allow you to kind of get there, and how to be creative about finding an education or employment, or just getting the things, like, you know, learning to swim, the things that matter to people.
So if you want to share your thoughts, you want to be present, you can do so. It's an open invitation to everybody this coming Thursday, 4th of May at 6 p.m. Kenny's Bookshop, just around the corner from us here in Lisbon Estate. Park responsibly, please. But Hannah Daly will be there. She is the author of Knowing No Boundaries, and she'd like to meet up with you as well. And keep up the good work, and keep up the work that you do. And keep up the writing as well, because it's a very honest. And what I like, it's authentic. There's humor.
Yeah, well, that's what you get.
It's authentic. Yeah, but that's good. It's authentic. It's humorous. It's all the things that the blurb says. But it's also an uplifting account of a very raw situation that you were through. So well done to you. Hannah Daly, again, if you want to go Thursday, we'll remind you again, 4th of May at 6 p.m. in Kenny's Bookshop, just around the corner from us here. And please do park responsibly when you're going there.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.
Now we'll be going to sport with Ollie next, a little earlier than usual, and it's Tuesday morning as well, because they had a great weekend in sport. And but I want to go to Garda Nicola Brown, who joins me first off. We have a couple of queries we're looking for your assistance with today. Garda Brown, good morning, Shia.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. Now, Garda and Oran Moore are investigating a burglary in the Johishka area. You've got full details on this.
That's correct, Keith. Gardaí in Oranmore investigating a burglary which occurred at Iceland Supermarket in Dohishka. It was on Tuesday the 25th of April between midnight and 1:20 a.m. A male had entered the supermarket. Anyone who has seen any suspicious activity in the area or may have any information are asked to contact Oranmore Garda Station on 091-388-030 or the Garda Confidential line on 1-800-666-111.
Again, Tuesday, 25th of April, did you see anything happening in the Johishka area? Iceland Supermarket was broken into. Now, a theft from an MPV, and we're coming into the city and Renmore on this one.
That's correct. Gardaí and Galway are investigating a theft from a van which occurred at the car park of St. Oliver Plunkett Church in Renmore. This theft took place on Wednesday, the 26th of April, between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. approximately. A number of tools were taken from the van, and Gardaí are looking to speak to anyone who witnessed any suspicious activity or have any information to contact us here in Galway, 091-53-8000, or the Garda Confidential line, 1-800-666-111.
Now, again, you're looking at another theft from an MPV, but you're going to the University of Galway car park on this one.
That's correct. We're also investigating a theft from a van which occurred at the University of Galway car park again on Wednesday, the 26th of April. This occurred between 1 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. A large amount of tools were taken from this vehicle, and we're looking to speak to anybody who may have seen any suspicious activity in the area or who may have any information to contact us on 091-538-000 or the Garda Confidential line again. That's 1800-666-111.
Again, if you've been offered tools for sale, they're somebody else's tools. For God's sake, will you not buy them, first off? Secondly, will you just ring 538,000 and give the guys the tip-off in Mill Street Garda Station so they can get somebody out and see if they're the tools that were stolen from the University of Galway car park, or indeed the one that was stolen from the church car park in Renmore. Now, a theft was some specialised equipment. Again, going back to the Renmore area there.
That's correct, Keith. The Gardaí here in Galway are investigating a theft. It's a defibrillator, and that was taken from the Renmore Association Football Club. This theft took place on Saturday, the 29th of April, between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. in the clubhouse. It's important to note, there, Keith, as well. This defibrillator was in a cardboard box. It was just after being purchased by the football club, so it may not have been known what was in the box itself. Gardaí are looking to speak to anyone who witnessed any suspicious activity or have any information in relation to this to contact Galway Garda Station 091 538 000 or the Garda Confidential line on 1800 666 111.
And in the wrong hands, a defibrillator is not for those that don't know what they're about. So please, if you know anything about it, or you found the box or otherwise, would you be good enough to contact Galway Garda Station 538 000. Garda Nicola Brown, thank you for joining us. Have a good and a safe week, and we'll remind you of those as well, but please don't buy stolen goods. What a weekend of sport it was. Oliver joins me in studio, and we're going to go to Gaelic games first off, Oliver, this morning. The draws for the group stakes of the All-Ireland Football Championships and Paladin Cup will take place this afternoon, but let's have a look back before we look forward.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great hurling match on Sunday in Nolan Park. Some say it wasn't quite the belter that Limerick and Clare was in terms of level, but I still thought it was a ferocious match and a great game for Galway to get a draw out of when it looked like it had really slipped away from them. I mean, typical Kilkenny, they just came out at the start of the second half in a position where Galway were in good shape after getting that early goal from Brian Concannon, and they dominated that third quarter, but Galway just about stayed in touch. And in fairness, 3 points in injury time is a great way to draw a match and get out of there with the point.
How did you get the last point? Was just
fabulous. And in
commentary was superb. Declan McLaughlin,
he'll never forget that score coming almost 7 minutes into injury time. The likelihood is they'll meet again in a Leinster final. I expect that they will. And who knows, there could be a third meeting in the offing if they're to meet again in an All-Ireland final. But before that, you'd have to say that it was a great spectacle and a great venue. Nolan Park, I mean, it just jumped out of the radio listening to the commentary from Niall and Cyril of that game. And 125 to 28 points was great shooting as well. So all in all, you'd have to say it was a really, really good day at the office for Henry Shefflin's sides. They would have found out and learned an awful lot more about themselves and where they can go and what kind of potential they have. The Miners blitzed Dublin yesterday. They were just far too strong. Yet another brilliant Galway Miner performance. And yet there was a sobering reminder of just how little Miners matter really when it comes to under 20, when you saw Galway losing out to Offaly on Saturday. All of those players would have multiple medals at minor level, at All-Ireland level, but yet they just never got going. Brian Henley says it wasn't even a performance when he was asked by our own Gordon Doohan afterwards what he made of the performance. He says they didn't perform. And a young Offaly team, you couldn't begrudge Offaly either now, Keith. They're a long time out of the limelight. They haven't won a Leinster under 21 since 2000, so they're a long time out of the scene. And they're building slowly but surely. And coming from Tier 2, it was a significant victory for them. And I suppose getting to last year's All-Ireland Minor Final where they were robbed late on, they've got some great young lads coming through. So if they get, you know, the kind of development that's going on at the moment and the kind of investment helped by the likes of Shane Lowry, that will all help. Michael Deignan at the helm. These are good times ahead for Offaly. Footballers unlucky to lose out to Louth after extra time in the Leinster semi-final, but they're having a great run of it as well, and they'll be in the draw for the Tailteann Cup this afternoon as well. So you couldn't begrudge Offaly on Saturday. The under 20 is very disappointing for Galway though, but then the Miners and Seniors really good.
Good stuff. A snooker, I didn't see this coming. I didn't see Ronnie coming out either as early as he did.
Yeah, Luca Purcell is the talk of the world in snooker terms. He's the first winner from mainland Europe, clearly the first Belgian to win a World Snooker Championship, and he did it in such a style that's being described as swashbuckling, where literally he doesn't practice, he goes for pints, he plays darts before he plays a match, he is a renegade, he is a header, and yet he has absolutely lit up the snooker world. He goes around like he hasn't a care in the world. He is the complete antithesis of everything that we know about snooker. Steve Davis, Cliff Thorburn, Terry Griffiths, yawn. Selby Allen in the Mark Selby, Mark Allen semi-final was just the most pathetic reminder of how bad snooker can be on the telly. If you've two players who aren't prepared to take risks and just play this safety first approach, it's a yawn fest. And then Brussel against Si Jiawei, the young Chinese player, was just ridiculous, the drama of the semi-final. And then to play Selby in the final, and in fairness to Selby, he showed what he could do. A 1-4-7 in a world final, first man ever to do so. He did that on Sunday in the last frame to make it 9-7. Yet Brussel came back, went 15-10 up, and then 16-10 at the start of the final session. And you're thinking, he only needs two more. But I kept thinking to myself, these are going to be the two hardest frames he'll ever win in his life. And sure enough, I had to turn it off. Because as I was watching it, it was car crash. Selby comes back, 16-11, 16-12, 16-13, 16-14, 16-15. We've watched this movie before. Young lad, Brussel, crying in his chair, just being worn down by the old dog Selby. And somehow he found it within himself to get over the line with those last two frames, including a final frame century. I mean, I don't know, do they even know what snooker is in Belgium? But they'll definitely know after last night, because Luca Brasella is on everybody's lips. And it's great for the continent, because Barry Hearn, he's always out there marketing, trying to sell snooker. Mm. Look at snooker is an English game. You know, we play a bit of it in Ireland, but we've only had Ken Doherty. He's only the fourth man outside of the UK to win the World Championship. You know, when you think of Cliff Thorburn winning it, and Neil Robertson, the Australian, and our own Ken. That's it. It's England, Scotland, Wales. Wow. You know, between Ronnie and John Higgins, and, you know, you think of Mark Williams, just to name the three that have come out of the class of 92. They've dominated the sport. Selby was going for his fifth title, which was hard to believe. And then out of nowhere, this Brussel, as you described, who is he? Where has he come from?
Where did he come
from? A precocious young player. Just a brilliant youth player.
How did he get so far to do what he did, to win what he won?
Without ever having won a match before. Yeah. I don't know. If you can work that out.
But I can't.
You'd be, I'd say every snooker player in the world would be looking for you to be their sports psychologist or coach.
How did he get to the table?
11 years trying to win a match, never did. And then he went and won it out. And he said himself in the speech afterwards, he was lucky to win his first round match. He beat Ricky Walden 10-9 in a final frame that could have gone either way. And he says, that's what you're dealing with here. He says, snooker is fine margins. Millimetres make the difference. And sometimes your name is just on, and it's fate, and it's meant to happen. And it happened for him. Just going back to the GAA, the draw's at 1 o'clock today. Somebody wants to know about the draw for the Sam Maguire Cup. So Galway are among the first seeds. So pretty much the four provincial winners will end up being in four separate pots. That's important to recognise. So if Kerry, Dublin, and let's say Derry win the provincial championships, and Galway beat Sligo next Sunday, then they'll be in four separate pots. In the other pots will be the four losers. So Galway, if they win the Connacht Championship, will get one of the runners-up in the other provinces. So they can't get Sligo, but they could get, let's say, Clare if Kerry beat them, which they should. Louth if Dublin beat them, which they should. Armagh if Derry beat them, which they should. So you could be looking at a scenario where Galway then will draw, let's say, Clare. Then the third pot, Mayo, Roscommon, Tyrone and Monaghan. Doesn't matter that Galway played Roscommon already, they can meet them again. You could have Mayo in the pot with Galway in the draw. And the final pot then is Donegal, Cork, Kildare and Westmeath. So what's the ideal draw? I suppose you could look at a scenario where Galway could be in four groups of four, by the way. They could be in a group with Clare, with Monaghan and with Westmeath. And that's your path to an All-Ireland knockout championship then into the semi-finals. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out. The draws really won't become full until after the provincial finals are played. So it'll always be either or. But that's coming up at 1 o'clock today.
You give it fully. Listen, briefly, can I go to Galway United? 100%.
Yeah, you'd got some odds on them losing to Longford last night, but lose they did. They conceded a goal after 3 minutes and they just couldn't get back into it. And they lost 1-0 to a side who were second from bottom. Luckily, Waterford lost as well. So the top two teams being beaten, and they were in such great form, you'd have got massive odds on that. They were going into it 11 out of 11, going for 12 out of 12. And do you know what? I think as you keep winning all these games, the pressure eventually builds because you know it's going to stop somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's probably good that it did, and it's great that it did and not cost them. So the fact that Waterford lost as well means it was largely irrelevant. So they can get back on the horse and, you know, this Friday night back in action at home as well. They'll hope to, you know, build on that.
I'd say they're shocked now.
Well, Waterford are coming to Galway, so it's a great chance for Galway to stamp their authority on it and move well clear at the top of the table. That Galway United Waterford match this Friday is clashing with Connacht and Ulster in the quarterfinals of the United Rugby Championship. So that's up in Belfast, obviously. So there'll be a lot of sport to look forward to this Friday night.
Good, good, good. Listen, thanks for joining us, and well done to all involved. And I'm going looking up this wonderful snooker player, Sian.
Luca Brasel.
Yeah, I'm going looking him up now.
Well, the first job is to pronounce his name right. That's the first thing. So we've done that.
You know I can't do that. All right, Oliver, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. And what a weekend of sport. Well done to all the sports team here in Galway BFM. It was just a wonderful weekend of sport throughout. Now let's head towards the 11 o'clock news and Death Notice. Stay tuned for that and much more to come.
Galway Tolls, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.